This is Lisa Henderson, your host for Daring Parenting on Hoodsprayed FM. We're delighted to have several guests today, and we'll be taking your questions as well. Our first guest is Evan Katz. He's a psychotherapist with a specialty in anger management, and his website is TheAngerGuy.com. We also have Val McGarry. She's a veteran teacher, and she retired and went back into the school system in library sciences. And she is going to share with us what she's seen that's changed over the years in education, and also some of the things she's learned as a parent that she'll share with us.
Evan, glad to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'd like for you, as we're talking about parents who are trying to figure out, A, if their child's angry, and B, what to do if they are angry. So I think we all kind of know a fist through the wall is an angry kid.
Yes.
That's an obvious one. What I'd like to know is some of the ways that we might spot that are a little bit more subtle or different, like that we might think are anxiety or depression.
Let's differentiate. The fist through the wall is angry behavior. It's not necessarily indicative of an angry child or an angry person.
Okay.
And that's where we usually misinterpret what's really going on. So the child who puts the fist through the wall is actually saying, I am feeling something so intense down below that the only way I know how to get it out is through angry behavior. And this is key to being able to recognize and understand more about what is going on in the internal workings of a teenager or any individual, any adult male or even a female.
Let's roll back the years some.
Sure.
Let's say your kid is 5 years old and they've gotten thrown out of kindergarten for biting or hitting.
Yes.
Is this the kind of child that may end up with anger problems later because they don't have the ability to show their feelings in another way?
That's a very good question. When a child is anywhere really from, let's say, 3 years old to about 11, maybe 12 years old, the way they communicate is primarily through feelings rather than, or through behaviors,
right.
Feelings that create behaviors rather than through verbal communication and words. And in fact, all of us do this. We've heard many, many statistics, certainly over 90% of our communication being nonverbal.
Right.
All kinds of different ways that we show. But the child who is biting or is hitting aggressively, more than development would suggest, is communicating something. Now, what we do with that, the anger underneath is made up of other feelings. And a child is just unable to articulate, probably even to identify, what it is they're actually feeling.
So underneath the anger are other emotions.
Correct.
What do you think anger is the primary cover for?
My experience has been, and I feel very strongly about this, anger is a secondary emotion. Causes are other feelings, and the feelings particularly are two. Fear, and fear falls into two categories, either afraid that we're going to lose something that we've already got, or we're afraid we're not going to get something that we want. And that may be a feeling, it may be love. We're not going to get the love that we feel we need or that we want at 5 years old. Or it may be we're going to lose our mother if we're bad. She's going to leave and not give us the attention that we need. So fear falls into two categories.
Okay.
The other primary emotion is emotional pain. And this covers a number of different words that we use to describe it, but primarily it's referring to the feelings of being less than, which we commonly call shame.
Right.
It's a feeling of guilt, well, we don't know why. It's rejection. It's a lack of attention.
Now, everybody manifests these kind of feelings differently. Like some people go into depression, some people become angry. And I think, too, it's easy to see classic angry signs, the behavioral things. What would you suggest that parents look for that we might like? In some of the research that I did, like sarcasm was one of the things that came up as kind of an indicator you might have an angry teen. I never would have thought of that consciously.
Correct. There's a few things that come to mind when you ask those questions. The issue with sarcasm, it's a way of us getting out our anger at someone else's expense. Sarcasm in and of itself is not the problem. Any behavior by itself is likely not the problem because as human beings, we're always growing and we always make mistakes and developing. However, what we're looking for In these young people, we're looking for a consistent pattern of behavior that we can see growing over any period of time. And a parent knows what that kind of a pattern looks like, just like when we see a child beginning to walk. There is a subtle pattern there, mm-hmm. and we're very clear when it starts to have problems, when it levels out maybe before it's supposed to.
What red flags would parents, and let's just say especially teenage boys, because this is right. primarily where this shows up, what would we look for?
When children, infants, are taught that to be successful as a male is to be autonomous.
Okay.
They are taught to play with army men. And army men never talk to each other. They're always in ones. And they go down the hill and up the hill, and it's about being autonomous. Where little girls are taught to play with dolls. And in dolls, they always talk to each other or they talk with them. Mm-hmm. And it's about saying and understanding that for me to be successful as a female is to have good relationships. So for a male to not be allowed or having grown up not being able to develop skill on their own and constantly being helped or over-controlled to where they couldn't make their own decision is going to be a major pivotal point when they go to try and change and become their own person as a young man. And they become frustrated. So that child will begin to feel those feelings of less than and a lot of fear that maybe they're not going to be able to be as independent because they're scared inside mm-hmm. as their peers. And as a result, they create a shield where no one can see those feelings unconsciously. And that shield is anger. Anger pushes people away. It provides a boundary, a fence, if you will, so that other people can't come in and touch and hurt those raw areas inside of us that we're so afraid of.
And I would also think, too, it would give you that false feeling of autonomy. Like I am, you know, that you own your anger and you own your protection and that it's some level of autonomy just in and of itself.
Absolutely. And this goes to your initial question. How are we able to recognize particular behaviors to know whether it's just moments of angry behavior or if our child may in fact have an anger problem? When a child has learned to develop defense mechanisms, anger, maybe passive aggression, maybe isolation, where they have essentially built walls that are so strong that no one can come in. This is an indication of a child who has a lot of fear and likely has a feeling of being less than just when compared to others. This child is likely going to exhibit significant anger when that wall starts to crumble and when it doesn't work anymore in their environment as they change into a teen and into an adult.
What kind of outward signs might indicate that either there's a crack in the armor or that it's gone beyond the point where the child is actively frustrated and angry?
Well, certainly we know that the fist through the wall, if we see a pattern of impulsive, angry behavior as a result of not getting what they want, we have to look at that and recognize that something's going on inside that made that experience particularly fearful or hurtful, even though that's not what's being shown. So that's certainly one indication.
Okay.
Another indication, believe it or not, is a child who insists on overperforming, a child who insists on being perfect. This child inside may not be exhibiting angry behavior outwardly, but in fact, they're exhibiting it internally. So when they try to be perfect, which in fact they'll always fail at,
right.
they constantly will internally criticize themselves and become angry inwardly, which in fact can be more detrimental than the outward explosion, although in society we focus more on the outward than we do on the inward. But the key to all of this is regulation and being able to regulate one's own behavior. However, the angry young man feels inside that it would be insanity, that it would be death. They would say to themselves, now they're going to be able to see who I really am, how I really feel. If people knew how I really felt, they wouldn't like me. And that's what they believe other people see. The healthy person is going to be able to recognize that while the sports help them and make them feel good and still get some of those benefits of the attention and the reward, during the off season, or if they have an injury, or when they make a mistake, because they're not overcompensating and simply trying to perform at a healthy level, when they have to sit out, inside, they're not feeling like nothing.
Okay.
They're feeling like a wholesome, healthy individual. And they're able to then regulate and say, yeah, I wish I was out there getting the attention, but you know what? I'm okay. I'll just live with it until next season.
So Val, how do you handle discipline issues that come up in the school system?
So each time the child is doing something wrong, it takes a real self-control effort on your part to say, this is an incident, let's handle it as it happens, but he will always be unconditionally loved. It's not going to be something that you're going to say, next time you do it, the consequences are going to be worse. It's a case of, you are in a bad space now, and so am I. And it works at school, and it has to work also at home. And if you're working on the same wavelength as the parents, then it works. I mean, I've sent children out to the discipline bench outside the deputy principal's office, and I've actually gone with them, and I've sat down next to them, and I've said, look, we both come out because what you were doing was bothering everybody. For example, the child pulled a chair out from one of his peers at the table. He fell, he hurt himself, he cried. I had to remove him.
Right.
And I asked him to explain his behavior. And I think sometimes children aren't given an opportunity to explain why they did it. Mm-hmm. Why did you throw the glass at the dog? Why did you slam the window? And so on and so on. There are lots of things that children do that sometimes we would want to do ourselves if we're angry and frustrated and so on. And it takes more time than spanking.
Evan, I understand these are some of the hallmarks of anger. The fist through the wall, of course we know that one. Maybe
childhood hitting and biting, relentless sarcasm, a need to overperform, and substance abuse. How often do you see angry teens come in who are abusing alcohol or drugs in order to deal with their feelings?
I would say that at least 90%, if not more,
wow,
of kids come in. In fact, they usually come to see me as a result of an addiction issue that they've been either caught with by their parents or by the school or by the police. And what we find out under that is we find out that the drugs or the alcohol are in fact medication to deal with real feelings about themselves. There is such fear inside that the teen says, I'm just nobody. I'm sure of it. And often it's because that's the message they perceive from their parents, not necessarily are getting,
right,
but perceiving from their parents. And their parents at this point in their life, although they would never admit it, are in fact an agent of God in a sense. They are all powerful, all everything. And while they tend to rebel against that, in fact, they are looking to those parents for structure.
So the greatest gift that a parent can do is intervene on the child, even if it comes to you, the child comes to you on the pretense of a drug or alcohol problem, and then they get to the underneath part.
Correct. It is very, very important for the parent to respond and not react. When a parent, particularly a mother, sees her child maybe doing drugs or getting in trouble at school, seemingly not having good relationships, their initial response is to react and say, oh my gosh, I didn't do it right.
Right.
I wasn't a good mother. So what happens is they get so wrapped up in their own emotional fear and their own emotional sense of shame that they're unable to objectively see what's going on with their child, and they are unable to help them from a healthy standpoint, because really what they're doing at that point is trying to fix their feelings. They're not necessarily giving the young man what they need. And these kids know. They feel that lack of connection. They recognize that the parent doesn't seem to understand. How many times we hear kids say, my parents don't understand me.
Oh, yeah.
I can speak mainly for young men more than the women. They're trying to find sense of connection without asking for it. Young ladies, it's accepted and normal for them to say, I want to have friends. I want to be close to people. I want to be with someone. It is largely unacceptable among teens in this country and at all different levels of economics and geographics. It doesn't seem to make a difference. The young man is trying to get what he needs throughout without asking for it. And again, he turns to behavior. So a rule of thumb that we can use in terms of understanding our children is to understand that if they don't talk it out, they're going to act it out.
That sums it all up. That's beautiful. Yes. If they don't talk it out, they're going to act it out.
Correct. And the reason they wouldn't talk it out is because they think that they're afraid, desperately afraid, likely that they won't be accepted if they talk it out.
Right.
And they're feeling so low inside about themselves, or they're so angry at themselves for not being perfect, or they've had instilled in them that if they're not perfect, they are to be embarrassed and ashamed, that they won't talk about it. They think that they're stuffing it and just keeping it inside, when in fact, it comes out all over the place. And we see those behaviors leaking out of like a bucket that has holes in it.
So some of the behaviors might be what?
Let's say, for example, a young man's at school. He was expecting to go into a class with his buddies. Yeah, however, he's put into a class for one reason or another, same level and so forth, where he doesn't know anyone. He's going to have to make new friends. What he's really looking at is, how are my friends in the other class going to perceive me? This is a child who has some low self-esteem and some real shame issues going on, because they feel that their other friends aren't going to like him anymore because he's not there all the time to remind them that he's part of the gang. He's feeling detached.
But how would we know that? Because I have a boy and a girl, and I know my son talks a lot, but sometimes he'll keep things in. Like, I wouldn't necessarily know he's feeling cut off from his friends, or he's feeling this sense of shame or whatever. How am I going to intuit this?
Certainly. I guess I've kind of strayed and answered in abstracts because it's so varied in the ways it's done. But let me give you some examples.
Okay.
One is, when we start to see a young man isolate, we'll see them isolate in a way that they don't want to necessarily hang out with people that have always made them feel good or be healthy. We may find them begin to find a friend who also seems to isolate or gets into trouble a little bit more. That gives them that sense of power. It's a way of getting out their anger, is by hanging out with someone who does act angry. So in the beginning, they may not be the one who acts angry, but they will start to be around kids who we look at objectively and say, why would my child want to be around this person when last year they wouldn't have dreamed of it? They wouldn't never have been around this person.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's a good clue.
Another example may be their overreaction to constructive criticism.
So they automatically think they go right to, I'm a bad person.
But the way they express I'm a bad person, because they don't talk about it, is they project that back onto the person who brought it up, because that person is threatening them. For example, Johnny's at school, mm-hmm. and he tried really hard, or he didn't try, and he got a bad grade on a test. And he comes home, and he doesn't tell his parents about it because he's angry, very angry at himself. He knows that he should have studied more, and he knows that he could have done better. And while he feels bad about it, unfortunately, he transposes that into the idea that because I didn't do well on the test, not I made a mistake, but instead, I'm a real loser. So the mom comes home, Johnny's at home, and he's feeling down or a little uncomfortable and trying to just watch TV and forget about it. And mom says, how'd you do on the test? And he says, I didn't do very well, but you know, I've done well on these other tests. And mom, having had an honest relationship and so forth, says to him, well, you know, you haven't done that on other tests. You've always done really well in this class, which is a very reasonable thing
right,
to say.
Right, yeah.
But we've seen this happen, and you could probably identify with this, as many parents could. This child will shoot back very angry and say, you don't know what was on the test. You don't know how hard it is in school. You don't know all the things that are going on in my life. And what this child is doing is projecting their anger at themselves onto their mother, because the mother is the one who was trying to tap on that door that was so tender.
Oh, that tender spot. I get it. Thanks so much, Evan. We'll continue talking to Evan Katz, the psychotherapist who specializes in anger management. And Evan is going to enlighten us about all the different ways that we deal with anger instead of dealing with it directly. So we'll be back in a moment on Hoodsprate FM with Daring Parenting.